guys. Welcome back to Pick Me, Choose Me, Podcast Me, where we are breaking down Season 1, Episode 7 of Grey's Anatomy, The Self-Destruct Button. Just be warned that this is a spoilers podcast. Also note that we are not doctors yet or nurses yet, but we are people who are passionate about Grey's Anatomy and healthcare. If you are new to this podcast, hi, hello, welcome. Please subscribe and rate us on whichever platform you listen to. It really does mean a lot. We also want you guys to participate, and we want to hear any comments, questions, or opinions you guys have. So please reach out to us on Instagram, Facebook, or email at pickmechoosemepodcastme@gmail.com. The whole crew is here today, me as in Haley. For those of you who are new, I'm a cellular biology and pre-med student.
Hi, my name is Shelby, and I am a Bachelor of Science in Nursing student.
Hi, I'm Shayla. I have my bachelor's degree in communications and a major in journalism, and I'm currently an editor for a newspaper and website. So working journalist at the moment. Know nothing about anything medical, but I do know a little bit about some script writing and that sort of thing.
Okay. So this is recorded like 2 days after the last episode, so classes still haven't started for me. But Shelby, you start tomorrow.
Yeah, so I had all of my orientation type things today, of course, over Zoom. And my first day in the hospital is tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. sharp. Love it.
So you can hear Athena crying upstairs. Can you guys hear her?
Yeah,
I didn't.
I don't think it will pick up. Okay, so Shelby, I know you've told me and Shayla the story, but I think you need to tell the listeners of the scare you had at work at the old folks' home.
Yeah, so we have quite a few people who have dementia, and sometimes they say things that don't necessarily make sense. But one night, it was 10:30, I had all of the lights turned off in the building so that if any of them left their suites, they would see that the lights were off and they would know it was the middle of the night, so they'd go back to their rooms and go back to bed. So I'm sitting in the dark at the front desk, and the elevator dings, and one of my ladies comes out, and she looks terrified and has as many clothes piled onto her walker as she could and was walking as fast as she could to the front door. And I was like, whoa, 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 where are you going? Like, it's the middle, like it's 10:30 at night, you should be in your room. And she turned and looked at me and she said, there's evil people in my room, I have to go. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? She's like, there's evil people, they're gonna get me, I can't stay here any longer. And I was like, but just come with me. Come show me these people. And I can't go in the room. I can't go in the room. I have to go. I have to get out of the building. So I finally convinced her to go back up to her room. And when we get there, I go to unlock her door. And she's standing in the hallway. And she said she wasn't going to come in the room with me. So I was like, okay. And I open the door. And all of her lights are off except for one. And it is turning on and off so fast. It's like a horror movie, like strobe lights in her room. And I really didn't like it because she's already freaking me out, telling me there's someone evil in her room. And then she walks up behind me very silently, I will add, and whispers in my ear, see, they're still in there. And I lost it. I was like, nope, I don't like this. I turned on all of her lights. I was like, you can go to bed now. See you in the morning. I closed the door and left her in her room. I went back downstairs and I turned all of the lights on in the main floor because I was just not dealing with that. I was very much freaked out. And I did not enjoy that experience at all.
That's so funny. And that's why, like, me and Shelby had a chat about this the other day. And I'm like, this is why, even though they make fun of it in Grey's Anatomy, I would way rather work in geriatrics than pediatrics, because in pediatrics, all they're going to tell you is who their favorite superhero is. They can't tell you shit. But the things you'd hear in geriatrics is just all the stories.
You never know what to expect. You get random sexual stories. You have some people who are very vulgar and swear all the time. You got happy people, sad people, and everything in between. It's just every day is new. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's funny. Hey, that made me laugh so much the first time. I'm like, we have to have this on the podcast. Anyways, are you guys ready to start the intro? Mm-hmm. Are we ready, kids?
Aye, aye, Captain.
Okay. do we want to just cover the intro and then when the interns start morning rounds, we do our morning rounds?
Yeah. Okay. I made note that this is actually one of the intros that I remember the most from the show because in all my times rewatching it, mm-hmm. because it's one of my favorite intros.
Oh, like, I do too. I love it.
The way that Izzy and George are like PO'd because Meredith is having some wild, loud sex the night before. George is like obviously jealous because the love of his life is not with him if she's with another man. And when they see that it's McDreamy sneaking down the stairs, yeah, I love that scene. I always have.
Oh, this whole intro, like, when they wake up together, I think I would be annoyed at my roommate, too, if I was Izzy and George, because, like, one, it's a work night. They're trying to get sleep, and two, like, I don't think anybody wants to hear that. Anyways, Izzy and George finally get a glimpse at who Meredith has been seeing. And as we discussed last episode, George had put together that Meredith had been seeing somebody, but the roommates never knew who until now. And I think he was a little shocked and more than a little hurt to find out that it's Derek. But Izzy was just kind of straight up pissed. Like, but first things first, Izzy's hair is really nice in this episode. Didn't anybody notice that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I get why she's upset with Meredith, but I think it's something that they should have been direct with rather than, like, passive-aggressive. Like, there's a few things that I dislike more than, like, passive-aggressive behavior. Like, if you have something to say, then say it. We can discuss it, and we can figure things out. And they're just, like, dropping little jabs here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they get to the hospital. George and Izzy are still pretty grumpy. And I love douchey Alex. And I think I miss it a little bit in the later seasons. Like when they're talking about Mare's sex life and he says, embrace it, share it. You're just like, ew.
Alex's entire episode is actually really hilarious. Like he's douchey, but also he's like, not like, oh my God, Alex, like get a hold of yourself level douchey this episode. It's kind of like in a funny way. Like, when he's eating with his mouth open and, like, cracking all these, like, foul jokes and
He never goes too far this episode.
No, yeah. No, it's, like, just enough that you're, like, you're an idiot, but also you're funny.
But he seems to only be dropping in this episode whenever someone makes a comment about, like, sex or, like, a sexual encounter, like, later in the episode when they're eating lunch and then, like, they all disperse because they're like, oh, God, Alex.
Yeah.
He kind of, like, ends all conversation because the same would happen to this intro scene. And so I find that was pretty funny. And then when they start their rounds, when O'Malley is staring at Derek, putting in eye drops. And I like how this is just a theme this episode. Like, I swear 90% of this episode, that's what George did. He just stared daggers at Derek.
Yeah, while we're on the topic of themes, I'd just like to point out, like, the whole tying together theme that I found for this episode was really, like, advocacy for yourself and advocacy for your patients. So there's a lot of people standing up for themselves this episode. And also, like, we'll see and talk about with George standing up for his patient.
Yeah, I get that. My theme is more centered around Meredith's patient, Alex's patient, which is the damage of trying to achieve a certain body image.
We're nodding,
basically. Yeah, nobody can hear your nods.
That's another one, advocacy, though, because Meredith is an advocate for her patient to her parents as well, right?
Mm-hmm. So, well, the interns are doing rounds. Should we do our morning rounds?
We shall.
Okay. Okay. So let's start off with the guy who swallowed his girlfriend's keys. And to me, this is pretty self-explanatory. Like, do I need to go into depth?
I don't think so. Basically, she's about to leave him. He's doing something desperate to try to keep her. It goes a little south for him. There's not too much else to explain. And Izzy, who's already annoyed at her, because she has a lack of sleep, and she thinks Meredith is getting favoritism rewards from Derek, is like annoyed that she has to put up with this bickering couple.
Mm-hmm. Any comments?
Nope, I think you pretty much covered it.
Yeah. Okay, then we have Claire. She's been weak and lost weight. She passed out, and a couple weeks previous, she went to Mexico, and now she has a fever. This is because, as we discuss later in the episode, she had an operation done in Mexico.
Yeah, would not recommend. really, any foreign country, any place where you could fly and get a surgery done cheaper, generally not a good idea.
Yeah, cheaper does not generally mean better.
Quicker, too. I feel like any of those places where it's like you can book in a surgery for like a day or two from now and like fly to it is not your best.
Super sketchy. That is my advice to you. Mm-hmm. Please do not do that.
Then we have Digby, who purposely got his friend to shoot him so he could have a cool scar. Any other comments?
No.
I feel like there's a lot of other ways that you could injure yourself to get a cool scar that does not involve having your friend shoot you in the arm.
Oh, yes. And we will get further into this with Alex. Because
I can poke you with a stick. I don't know. Call it a day. Pretend you got shot.
Don't mutilate yourself. Yeah. A cool scar.
Or just like get a tattoo that looks like a scar.
Yeah. Yeah, you can do that now. There's actually like a form of, it's not tattooing, but you can get scarring done.
That's which painful. Is also kind of.
Like, tattoos would be painful, like purposely scarring.
Would be really painful. Ugh.
No. And then the last patient we have on our rounds is Jamie, who is a 2-year-old girl, and she presents with a foot twitch that George initially examines. She has a CT scan that shows a brain abnormality, and she is having seizure signs.
She's that a cute little girl.
Oh, she's cute. Is that
also,
it for
George is, like, super good with her when he's, like, checking her out in her foot twitch, and, like, she's kind of playing with, like, whatever's hanging around his neck.
Mm-hmm. Shoves her foot in his face and he just like grabs onto it. And it's kind of like a little handshake, but with her foot.
Mm-hmm.
Just super cute.
Who do we want to start with this episode?
Why don't we start with Meredith?
Okay, I agree because she's first on my list and that makes it easier for me. So I really like to begin with that Meredith made Claire's parents leave the room in order to talk to her. I think that it was the right call to make because people often won't disclose the necessary information to you in front of their parents. And it was really important that she made Claire feel like she was more of a safe space.
I also feel like it helped Claire feel a little more controlled because even like as a minor, her parents do have the final say, I guess, right now because they are her legal guardians. And so it gives her that little bit more like, oh, I can talk and say my piece if I need to. It's like more independence, I guess, in that way.
So Meredith sees incision scars on Claire's stomach and realizes that she must have gotten surgery in Mexico. And they figure out that she got a gastric bypass. And a gastric bypass is commonly known as the stomach stapling surgery. And it's usually performed on bariatric patients to make your stomach smaller in order to decrease your portion sizes. And so the food you eat will no longer go into certain parts of your stomach and intestine. This is not a quick, easy weight loss solution. And doctors will really only recommend this if everything else fails. All surgery has risk. And if there is an alternative, that will usually be taken first. The mother was mad that her daughter had to buy size 6 jeans. size 6. Size 6 jeans have a waist size of 27 to 27 and a half inches in the U.S. According to Healthline, the average waist size for an American teen girl is 32.6 inches. Her mother was mad that she is smaller than the average American teen and wants her even smaller. For adult women, the average waist size is 37.4 inches. Yet, we never hear about that. Like, all we see on social media and tabloid magazines are the pictures of very, very small, thin people and young women being told they need to be thinner. And that is what happened to Claire. She mutilated her own body in an attempt to be smaller, to fit societal standards, and to make her mother happier with her body image.
Yeah, I always remember this mom because she's like truly a full definition of a Karen. She's just like, it's horrible. It's horrible the way she treats her daughter. It's almost like she treats her like a doll that should be seen, but only seen if she looks right and like not heard.
And I feel like she doesn't take into account like all of the wonderful things about her daughter. Like, she's a college student. She gets straight A's. She's a nice girl. And her mom just doesn't see any of that. All she sees is the fact that she can't fit into the jeans that she bought her last summer.
Mm-hmm. Like, the mom is just so belittling Claire down into being a certain size. And that's not all that matters to her.
And not even the size, but she says that when she found out that Claire got the gastric bypass, she said, oh, of course she went the easy way out. And just so many rude things. Like, it didn't even seem like she was worried about her daughter. She was just worried about how her daughter would affect her own image.
Right. And looking at her mom, it doesn't surprise you that Claire would take chances with her life by going, like, to a different country to get a surgery to try to like lose weight.
Mm-hmm. And this mother makes me so mad. She takes the easy way out of everything. Forgive me, I'm gonna cuss, but shut the fuck up. I'm sorry, but it is your pressure and your inability to instill confidence in your daughter and make her think that she is the only thing that matters is being skinny and having a good reputation. Shut up. Skinny is not always the indication of health, and she's getting mad at her husband for being supportive and positive towards their daughter? No, that's not okay. So, and that's something I noticed in this episode. Like, the parents differ in their reactions to everything, and I think it speaks more words than anything. The father is concerned and says she doesn't need to lose weight. And honestly, she doesn't. Claire is a very healthy size. And the mother comes in with, we are in disbelief, and proceeds to go over different dieting strategies the first time they see their daughter after finding out this information. Like, what the hell? I wish there weren't actually parents out there like this. And it just makes me sad that there actually is.
Yeah. And it's just horrifying that there are parents like this. And the fact that especially, I don't know in America as much, but I assume it's probably just as expensive as Canada. Like, therapy's expensive. And this girl's going to need therapy for a long time. Besides her physical inability after her surgery, like, her dietary needs are never going to be the same again because of the surgery and certain things that they couldn't reverse.
Yeah, because there were so many complications when her, like, when she had her botched gastric bypass, she had, like, so much bowel edema, and she had a big abscess under her diaphragm. So when they went in and did the surgery to reverse the bypass, they weren't able to fix everything. Like, some of her bowel had been so swollen that it had died, so they had to remove some of it. So now when you have a shorter bowel, your body isn't able to process foods the same way ever again. So now, for the rest of her life, she'll have a harder time getting the proper nutrition she needs from eating because she doesn't have all of her bowel, which is just terrible.
And, like, that's a really hard thing to go through when you have complete and full support of family and friends around you to help you and to accept what nutrition and new guidelines you need. But it would be so much harder if you have somebody who's nitpicking you the whole time and putting you down as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge lifestyle adjustment. And to go through it in a cloud of negativity.
One thing that I wish that the show would have done was I wish they would have sat down, had a staff member like Meredith sit down with Claire and tell her the things that we're saying right now. You didn't there was really no moment where they sat down with Claire and talked about nutrition and health and gave her more information or asked her if she had any questions or referred her to somewhere. Yeah. Because personally, after watching this episode, I would consider Claire to be an at-risk patient for future, like, I feel like she would have future problems with that would be weight related. So she needs some kind of mental health support to get her through everything she's experiencing. Because watching this episode and seeing her reactions to them having to reverse the surgery and her still wanting to be thin, I would think that she would go to something like bulimia, for example, and go a different unhealthy way to try and lose weight.
Yeah, exactly. Her mental health is so damaged that she would rather be thin than healthy. And like you said, Claire's happy that she has eating problems. And it just makes me so sad. Like, this woman's mental health is so damaged. And really, being thin isn't all that health is about. It is about balance. And like, every woman I know, even the ones that are my personal body goals, beat themselves up about physical flaws. Some more than others. I did this a lot too. I still do this a lot too. In my first year university, I put on weight. I followed so many Instagram fitness models, and it was really damaging to my mental health. And you get into this mindset that if I'm not perfect, nobody will like me. And I mean, I'm personally a mesomorph. So I'm a naturally very muscular person. So I put on muscle like it's nothing. And in high school, I played competitive hockey. And so I always felt butch. I was always felt like manly looking, you know, like that. And then when I put on weight, and so you never kind of fit your ideal body. And then you have society telling you, no, you need to look like Kendall Jenner or Kylie. And you're just like, no. So I unfollowed most of the fitness pages I originally followed. And now I follow more pages like Mick Zazon, and I don't know if I said that right, and Danae Mercer, who are trying to normalize normal bodies and bring awareness to the mental health aspect of fitness, because there is an insane amount of pressure on young women and young men to look a very specific way, and it's damaging to mental health, and we see that with Claire in this episode.
Yeah, like, there is a big difference between what people think you should look like when you're fit versus what you actually look like when you're a fit individual. Like, if you were to say on paper that someone works out 4 to 5 days a week and only eats X amount of calories in a day and blah, 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 you would say that they're probably a very thin person.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not true. You could literally be any body style and still fit that piece of paper, but nobody talks about that.
No. And it's because the way we see beauty ads, like, we see so many beauty ads every day when we grow up. So you grow up thinking that this is so normal for everybody else, looks like all these Instagram fitness models. Like, why don't I look like that? And then it wasn't until actually I was doing some of the research here, I'm like, wait, the average waist size for teenage girls 32 inches, the average waist size for an adult woman is 37 inches? I'm like, why did I have this always in my head that the normal size of most women is like a size 4 to a size 6?
I don't think I've ever been a size 4 or a size 6. Like, maybe when I was 10.
Yeah, I have one pair of size 4 pants, and they're my Lululemon pants from grade 7 that I have stretched out so far that they fit like a size 8. And they're full of holes.
Yeah, it's true. It's insane, the body image standards of today. And, I mean, there's still the fact that there are those people who still are unwilling to accept anything other than the idea of thin is beauty. Because you see it a lot, so many, like, of these, like, plus size advocates or, like, just be yourself, love your body, how you are kind of thing. And people, like, are horrified. And I think it's because they're insecure with the idea that their version of the way the world is molded and set to revolve isn't that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're... Yeah, it's just, like, it bothers me so much when it's, like, some thin person, like, super thin, and they're, like, ugh, you're disgusting. You're, like, a whale to somebody who's, like, anything larger than, like, a size 6. Like...
Yeah, and
I think that just shows, like, a blatant lack of empathy, really.
And it goes both ways, too. Like, my best friend, she's a very, very tiny Polish woman. And she's kind of the other way around, where she's naturally got a very high metabolism and she struggles to get her weight up to a healthy weight. And then people are on her like, you need to eat a hamburger. Mm-hmm. You need to have curves. And Cassia's like, don't you think if I could control that, I would.
Let's just normalize not talking about other people's bodies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if it doesn't affect you, you don't need to speak on it unless you want to pay them a compliment. But don't pay them a compliment like, wow, you look so skinny or you look so whatever today. Like, let's pay more compliments to, like, how they acted that day or what they're wearing or something that you, like, really appreciate them. Because I think
you're absolutely glowing.
Yeah. Like, there shouldn't be a need to comment about somebody else's size, like, ever.
Mm-hmm.
Or for that matter, what they're eating, because I know a lot of people don't feel comfortable sometimes what they're eating, like, if they go out into a public restaurant. I know there are a lot of people who are bigger who will, like, avoid ordering certain foods at a restaurant because they're afraid of being judged.
In high school, I could, like, I don't have enough fingers to, I don't have enough hands, probably, but I don't have enough fingers to count how many people I knew that would never bring lunch to school. Teenage girls would not eat food at school because they were afraid that people would judge them.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to be seen eating because they thought that being seen eating would make them look undesirable. Since when is putting fuel in your body so you can live undesirable? Like the fact that not just girls, but guys too, have to go through this. Like,
yeah, it's just disheartening. But anyways, shall we continue on with Meredith?
Yes. So they're in the operating room. This, of course, and her mental health is something Bailey and Meredith discuss. And Bailey is really laying hard into Meredith and making her jump through hoops. And in my opinion, Meredith took it really well. And I think she handled it a lot more maturely than Bailey does. And unfortunately, she gets body fluid all over her.
Yeah, but I said this too. I'm like, Meredith is so in the right here and Bailey is wrong. And Meredith is handling it really well. She's not screaming at her like, you shut up about me. You don't need to know anything about me. She's like, you know what? I do my job and I'm jumping through hoops for you and I'll keep jumping through hoops for you. But what I do in my personal life outside this hospital when it's not affecting you isn't your business.
Yeah.
And then Meredith needs to shower after that. And Izzy's just kind of a bitch to her when they're in the locker room. And I want to ask you this. Do you think Izzy is justified?
Little bit. I think Izzy needs to ask Meredith
the whole story. I think in the moment with the information she has, Izzy's a little justified. I think it's more to then, like, Izzy believes at this point that Meredith could be getting, extra surgeries and all this for sleeping with Derek. But I also think that Izzy's hurt. I think that Izzy is one of Meredith's best friends. She lives with her. And I think she thought that she was closer with Meredith. And Meredith didn't tell her this big secret and part of her life.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point. I didn't really think of that. Because we see it, like, Izzy talks about it a little bit later on in the series, how she's like, it's always Christina and Meredith, yeah. And I get left out of everything, and I'm not told anything. And so, I do see that, and I think she's a little bit justified in what she
like,
knows.
Like, I think a big part of it is just being hurt.
I think my opinion is more, I understand where she's coming from, and I completely understand why she's hurt, but I think she handled this very wrong.
Yes.
And I think she should have approached her friend, because we see at the end of this episode, they have a nice talk, and they figure it all out, and Izzy actually ends up understanding.
Yeah. I think she approached it the wrong way, but also I do think her feelings are justified in that moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Shelbs?
I agree with you guys. I'm glad that in this episode, why is my brain not working?
We can keep going. How many online courses did you have today?
Oh my god.
Keep going.
Their names, I'll be like, I'm going to say someone's name, and then it's just like blank.
We'll move on for you,
shall we move on to George?
We can move on to George.
Who did you have next on your list?
Alex, but it's okay. I'm reading off of my tablet.
I feel
now.
Like Alex, we kind of has covered everything that we needed to talk about.
I have shit to talk about.
Really? How long is our episode going to be if we talk about
Fine. Alex? I'll cover my quick thing about how he finally, like, he had a patient he really bonded with over wrestling, and he began to really admire this patient. And then this patient just suddenly, like, died. And you can just see how wrenched Alex is at the end of the episode, because we don't usually see that kind of emotion out of Alex. So I just wanted to make that comment and be like, it seems like every time Alex does get, like, kind of a connection, it gets quickly wrapped away. And I think in this episode, when he has his kind of douchey humor that he brings in with the others, it's him trying to connect with people. And he's a little bit socially incompetent because he doesn't know how to properly, like, make those connections. And he finally found a bro he could bro out with, even though it was a patient. And then they up and died on him.
Yeah. Like I said, I really enjoyed Alex this episode. Like, he doesn't have a very big part this episode, but it was good for, like, what it was.
Yeah. The part that made me really sad when his patient dies was right after he coded on the table and Alex picks up the picture that he'd just recently taken of the bullet wound for the patient, because the patient wanted a picture of it. And as he's looking at the picture, he says to Burke, "This was the first person I've met here from back home." And I think a part of Alex in that scene was homesick as well. And that was another reason why he had this connection with his patient, because they went to the same college and they wrestled together, and it was almost like a little piece of home and a friend. And then when he died, I think it also made him homesick in a way.
Well, and I think, like, for him, the reason why that connection over the wrestling is so strong is this is one of the only parts in his childhood that wasn't broken. And so, yeah, so I do feel actually quite a bit of sympathy for Alex this episode.
Yeah, for sure.
And you want to talk about George?
I do, because I love Georgie this episode. Everything about George this episode is beautiful and perfect. And even when he's being a sourpuss, it's like we know exactly why he's being a sourpuss. It's because he loves Meredith. And Meredith isn't his. And she's with the hottest doctor in the hospital. The hottest, like, he's the best at surgery. Like, he's a hot shot. He's hot and he's a hot shot.
Yeah.
And, like, to George, that's unattainable. Well, it's literally unattainable. And he's like, if she's with this now, how the hell am I ever supposed to, like, be, yeah, get into her life that way.
Yeah, and it's summarized by the line, I love this part. Is this Dr. Shepherd good? And he just deadpan looks at the parents. Just about everything.
Yeah. Like, and oh, you know what? George. I think that also shows George's ability to separate the patient care from his personal feelings, because I think we see with a couple of the doctors in a lot of instances, and we've seen it in previous episodes, where they let their personal lives carry over into, like, their attitudes mm-hmm. when they're talking about the other doctors to the patients. And George doesn't let his current moment opinions on Derek reflect how he speaks to the patient's parents about him.
Mm-hmm. And then Derek is doing an examination of Jamie when they call for that consult. And Derek's also really good with
kids. Oh, he's so good with kids. I literally thought the moment he was doing that examination, and I'm like, this is what he's going to be like with Zola in a couple seasons. Because he is. He's, like, not just attractive, talented, smart, funny, charismatic. He also has to be good with kids. And, like, I don't know if other ladies feel the same way. But to me, when, like, a guy that you're interested in is, like, really good with kids, it doesn't matter if in the present mindset you want kids or not. There's something that's a little bit ovary melting about it.
Yeah, I'm not a kids person, but I definitely find it an attractive quality if a guy's good with kids or animals.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
So an important topic with George is, while George is busy glaring at Derek from the scrub room, the anesthesiologist, Dr. Taylor, walks by and George smells bourbon, which is openly acknowledged by the guy who gave him the scans. And this is where George's concern originates about this anesthesiologist. Oh, it's a tough topic. And then later when they're discussing that, they have to perform a hemispherectomy because half of Jamie's brain tissue is dead. And so they have to remove the dead tissue before it spreads. And George gets a scrub in. It leads to a confrontation as well.
Which, like, I give massive kudos to George in this moment. Because for all he knows, he could be putting his own position as an intern in this program at risk by speaking out against the higher ups in the operating room. And he's putting a lot at risk for himself. But he knows that what's more important is that little girl on that table and that she's getting the best possible medical care. And he's concerned enough for her about the anesthesiologist that he risks his own position in the program to speak up.
Mm-hmm. And I will add, this is kind of a dramatization?
Yeah, whatever. Pronunciation.
Okay. It's more theatrical than in real life, because in real life, nobody could punish George for speaking up because that's his job as a coworker and as a healthcare worker to speak up when you see somebody else doing something that they're not supposed to. So even though that he doesn't have seniority, they couldn't fire him for anything that he said. He would mm-hmm. not be removed from the program. And realistically, if anything were to happen in that surgery where the patient was harmed or there were any adverse effects, everybody in that operating room that knew that the anesthesiologist was drunk could also be blamed.
Yeah.
And it's not only the person that is drinking, but it's the people who know that he's been drinking and don't speak up that also can get in trouble. And that's something really big with AHS. Like, if you know that someone is doing something that they're not and you don't report them, you will also get in trouble because it's almost like
I was just going to say, for those who don't know, AHS is Alberta Health Services.
Oh, my bad.
I remember once upon a time when you wanted to be an anesthesiologist.
Oh, yeah.
It was like junior high or something like that.
So many years of school.
Then you're like, it's not worth it.
Yeah. Something switched when you realize how many years it was. You get paid good.
They have a long residency.
So, and because of all of the fears that George has about speaking up about what he thinks is happening, that is exactly why there are whistleblower policies set in place for many different, fields and so many different jobs everywhere, but specifically in healthcare, there's hotlines and you can talk to your manager. And if it involves your manager, there's like a whole chain of people that you can talk to and it will be anonymous right off the bat. You can just make a formal complaint about someone as long as it's not hearsay. You have to have proof of what's happening if you're going to complain about it or report it. And they will guide the process, kind of help you through it. But it can never come back on you as a whistleblower. If you report something as a misconduct or something that someone has done and you report it, you will never be in trouble for it.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I think I like that Derek apologized to Derek in the, or that's why I like that Derek apologized to George in the end, because it's exactly like what you said, that everybody in that room's responsible if something's gone wrong. And so Derek's like, I should have said something because I was the one doing the cutting and I was wrong not to kick Dr. Taylor out sooner.
Yeah, I wrote down too that Derek stood up and he apologized. He didn't like just let George go about it and like let the matter dissolve. He's like, no, you need to know that you were right for standing up. And he let him know that you should continue to do that.
In a way, Derek was almost covering his own ass, because at that point, George could still go and say, this happened in the OR just now. I said something and Derek kicked me out of the OR for it. And if Derek didn't stop him in the hallway and confront him about it, he could have lost his job. So even though it makes him look good when he was apologizing to George, really, he was covering his own ass.
Well, and
by the way, if you forget what happened in the OR, because I don't think we've actually said it.
I guess.
Dr. Taylor, the anesthesiologist,
fell asleep
because he was drunk and the anesthesia was lightning. Mm-hmm. And the little girl started to wake up on the table with in brain surgery. Not a good thing to have happen.
Yeah, and he didn't wait till he got yelled at. And actually, when I was looking into it, alcoholism in physicians, they actually give a few techniques in identifying addiction in doctors and nurses who are high-functioning addicts. And we actually see a couple of these in Dr. Taylor, such as falling asleep on the job and smelling of alcohol. But other sides include frequently changing jobs, preferring night shifts where there's less supervision, volunteering often to administer narcotics if they have a narcotics addiction, anxiousness about working overtime, unexplained absences, glassy eyes or small pupils, incomplete charting or errors frequently in paperwork. And alcoholism is actually quite common in physicians and nurses compared to the rest of the workforce because it is a high stress job, but they actually have quite high rates of addiction because they have quite not easy access to certain drugs, but more access than the general population to two of the most abused substances, which are oxycodone and fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Dr. Taylor definitely should have been fired. We see about
five seasons from now in the parallel universe episode when Lexi Gray's like a drug addict and swipes Jackson Avery's key card to the meds cabinet.
Let's not forget about the other Dr. Shepherd, who was a drug addict.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, Amelia, yeah, that's a big one.
And Dr. Weber, who's also abuses high functioning alcohol.
Alcoholic, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think those are my notes on George.
Yeah, I don't really have anything else on George. I think he has, after all of this is said and done, I think he's still not, like, happy with McDreamy. I think he doesn't hate him as much as he did at the beginning of the episode. I think he kind of has, like, a grudging respect for him in the way that he's, like, this dude, I don't like that he's with Meredith, but also, like, he's badass enough to, like, perform this surgery on this little girl and do it properly and correctly and all this kind of stuff.
And I like that he acknowledged that George figured out that they were together.
Yeah.
And George is like, she's amazing, you know that. And he's like, I know that. Yeah. And so I think even though he doesn't like him, I think it gave George at least a little bit of comfort that Derek actually has feelings for him and using him. Because that's in my notes on
That
Izzy. When George asks her if she's seen Dr. Shepherd, and she's like, not as up close as Meredith has. And he's like, are you trying to get her fired? And Izzy's like, oh, well, she should know better. And he's like, well, Derek's the attending. He should know better. He's taking advantage of her.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to believe that Meredith, like, would make that choice on her own.
Yeah, he wants to believe that she's still emotionally available.
Yes.
I have a couple notes on are we done with George?
Yeah. I think we're done with George.
I have a little bit on Izzy and just a teeny, teeny bit on Yang.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Yang, something big happens.
Yeah. There, so my notes for Izzy, because she has to perform that bronchoscopy on that guy who swallowed those keys. She's got to get the keys out. And, oh, man, when you're hearing what they're arguing about, well, what the girlfriend's telling the boyfriend about, the boyfriend called the girlfriend's therapist, pretending to be his therapist to find out what she said about him.
Yeah. That's, like, sociopathic.
And that also illegal. Would never happen.
Yeah.
One, like,
one therapist would never, like, just disclose their patients. Like personal, like conversations with them to another therapist without, like, I guess proper documentation at least. Nothing, if not at all.
That would just wouldn't happen because yeah. The one therapist, if he's not that other person's therapist, he has no business knowing anything about her.
Yeah.
It's absolutely none of his business
mm-hmm.
at all.
Yeah.
So that should not have been disclosed therapist to therapist. At all, even with the proper, like, chain of command and paperwork and mm-hmm. identification. Everything. But if someone just randomly phones you and says, hey, I'm so-and-so, I need this information, it doesn't matter who's over the phone. It's
you don't tell them.
Yeah, legal.
And like, you can't even confirm that over the phone. Like, when I worked at the doctor's office, I could have been called one of the specialists and be like, hey, I'm doctor this, can I have the information? They're not going to tell me anything because they can't prove that I'm that doctor.
Yeah,
right. And then he continues, he also wanted her to quit her job because she started making more money than him, and this is a toxic relationship at its finest.
Yes, just because she makes more money than you doesn't mean that your masculinity is at risk. Like, it makes me so bad.
Yeah, they're just, like, they don't seem like they have a very healthy relationship in general.
No.
You swallow her keys to stop her from leaving you.
Yeah.
I don't.
That's the kind of thing. He seems like the kind of guy that would, like, escalate things. Like, if she continued to stay with him, like, to a higher power. Like, I don't know. Locking her in the house and, like, caging her in.
He also seems like he'd be a gaslighter.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, yeah. Or, like, the guy from, like, Unsolved Mysteries. Like, oh, I killed her. They don't say if he actually killed her. But now she can never leave me.
Oh, God. The guy who was cuddling with his wife's ashes? Yeah.
Now she can never leave me. Because she's in an urn.
That's a bit of an escalation.
Yeah. But, you know, could happen.
Yeah. So that's why, like, I understand Izzy when she just gives the girlfriend the keys, and she's like, just leave. For all of our sakes, just leave.
And he's like, good luck finding where I parked it.
Like, oh my god. Like, I just...
Psycho.
So bad.
All right, what were we on to next after Izzy?
I just want to talk... Yeah, so I just wanted to skip to the end when she's talking to...
When she's talking to Meredith.
And I just, like, I hate you and your cake. And she's like, my cake is good.
Yeah, I would like to point out, too, I think this is the first, like, Izzy baking moment we see, which is, like... Izzy, throughout her entire run on the show, that's, like, her thing. When she's emotional or emotionally upset about anything, she bakes. Mm-hmm. Like, and you'll see it a lot.
Mm-hmm. I love that I hate you and your cake, and it's like, my cake is good. This honestly reminds me of, like, Shelby, like, making me food, and then, like, me telling Shelby stuff where I'm like in a bad mood. Shelby's like, here, because Shelby's honestly the home buddiest of us. She's like, here, I'm a good cook, I can do this, and she's like the perfect girlfriend material. And then she's like, here, have this and talk to me. That's what also, Izzy reminds
this me interaction of. Where she's like, you love my cake. It kind of reminds me of the earlier interaction in this episode between Christina and Burke. He's like, you're sick, you need to go home and sleep, you need to go home and rest. And she's like, you go home and sleep, and, like, storms away. And he's like, but I feel okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are all my notes on Izzy. Do you guys have any other comments?
I just wanted to say that the interaction at the end where they're in the kitchen and Meredith is eating the cake and they're talking about Derek, the drastic change in Izzy's demeanor towards the whole situation, I think proves Shayla's theory that Izzy is upset about the fact that Meredith never told her about Derek. Because as soon as Meredith opened up and started talking about Derek, Izzy backed off.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, Meredith actually has feelings for him. And then she's like, tell me about it. I have no sex life. I need to live precariously through you.
Yeah, I think she just... Precarious, sorry. I'm hooked on it. It's vicariously.
What?
It's vicariously. Precarious is like being cautious. Precarious. You're like very, very cautious.
Well, I've gotten that out. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, vicariously.
Yeah, no, it's like as soon as...
Is it actually vicariously?
Yeah.
Always said, like, precariously. My entire life! Nobody told me this sooner!
You probably, like, said it fast enough because you talk fast.
I talk
fast. Nobody caught it. But
oh, man, I've been saying that wrong my whole life.
Here you go. People can still be smart and have no idea. Hilarious. Anywho, her sex life, she's living it vicariously through Meredith. And, like you said, I think she's just happy that Meredith opened up to her. Mm-hmm. And also it's such like that's one of the scenes where you're like it's very relatable to real life because the amount of times that we've like even the three of us have just like sat on the kitchen or leaned against the island and just like gossiped and talked about our lives while munching on something. Like it's quintessential female friendship right there.
Mm-hmm.
So funny.
I like how we let her continue on, but we both made a face.
We did.
I was like,
Yang, like we mentioned earlier, she's feeling very fluish, not herself, pretty queasy. She puts on a bold face. I love the part where she's coming down the stairs. And Bailey's still chewing out Meredith about something. and Yang is coming down the stairs. And Bailey asks her how some status on something is. And, like, Yang turns around with this smile. And she's like, oh, it's going great. Like, da da da. And then, like, the second she turns around, it's like, it looks like she's about to puke. And I think that's the brilliance of Sandra Oh's like comedic stylings in her dramatic acting.
Yeah. And I love when Burke is telling her to go home, and she's like, a disease diagnosis and prescription, all from one man. She's convinced that he got her sick, which in a particular way he did, but not in the way she thinks.
Yeah. Shall we skip right to the elephant in the room?
Yeah, she's dizzy and out of it all day, and we know it's not the flu because we've seen the series 20 million times. And in the end, she takes a pregnancy test, multiple pregnancy tests, actually.
Yeah, and spoiler alert, because it doesn't say it at the end of the episode, I don't think, but no. She's pregnant.
Yeah.
She is pregnant. And for Christina, who is career-driven and a one-track pony, children are not on the plate.
Did you say a one-track pony?
Yeah.
I've never heard that before.
Well, all right.
I've heard one-track record.
I've heard like one-track mind.
I've never heard one-track pony, although it does make more sense.
It does make sense.
You know, a racetrack?
I mean, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. One-track mind. Whatever. It's better than precariously. Children just aren't on the plate for her right now, especially not in her internship and residency.
No. Those are all my notes except for, like, my final picks.
Yeah, so should we start with Scott or our person?
I don't know. Shelby, do you have any comments on Yang before we move on?
I don't think so.
Okay. I just thought I'd check.
Also, let's hypothetically say she's not pregnant and she was to have the flu. Shelby, as somebody who works in the hospital, what is the protocol for that? Should you not probably be staying home if you're that queasy with the flu, like, and not interacting with patients?
Yeah, you should be at home. And even if you do come in when you're sick, you should be masked the whole time. Basically like COVID now, where you wear a mask 24/7. That is what you should do, because flu sped by droplets. Yuck. Mask is required.
Masks on, people. Okay. Do we want to, who's our person or our Scott?
Let's choose our person first.
Okay. Well, my person this episode is George.
Me too. I love Georgie. Georgie is perfect in this episode. You can't tell me otherwise.
Well, he was good because he, like, stood up and he did the right thing. But I also found a little bit of comic relief because, like, I swear, so many times this episode, like, it just pans to just, like, George just staring angrily at Derek.
George's character is utter perfection this episode because he's funny, he's brilliant in his advocacy, everything. He's just, this is like the moments like this episode where you see the quintessential George, and it's really sad towards like the ending seasons of his arc on the show where you don't see as many, or there's some decisions where you're like, well, that doesn't make sense for George. But this, like, this episode, you're like, this does. Everything that he does in this episode makes sense for George.
I love George too, but I think my person this episode is Meredith. I love the way that she handles her situation with Claire. And I love how she handles her coworkers when they are being really rude to her about Derek.
Is it true? And she has some really good sex this episode.
She does.
Yeah. She gets to live her dream. She gets to live my dream.
Yeah.
Kenny, don't listen to this. It's okay. He has a crush on Derek too.
All right. Who are we going to put on Scott? Can I go first?
Yeah.
Dr. Taylor.
Yeah, I put Dr. Taylor on Scott.
I wanted to be to the punch. The anesthesiologist. He gets Scott.
Yeah, he does.
Also, Bailey gets another bedpan this episode.
Damn it. Yeah, I wrote it down. God damn, did you look at my notes?
I didn't. You mentioned it last episode. Bailey got a bedpan for being rude to Meredith, so she gets another bedpan. Just one.
Yeah, Dr. Taylor on Scott, and Bailey got the bedpan for me.
Yeah, I can't even disagree with you guys.
Those are your same picks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was pretty clear cut. I think out of like the main character, like the main four interns, I don't really have a like a bad guy to choose this time. Like no. Maybe like I was a little bit like miffed at Izzy, but I understand where she's coming from, so I feel like I couldn't completely.
Yeah, it wasn't enough to put her on Scott.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's all we have for this episode.
Yeah, so we so please, if you have any questions, comments, or you have any special info about special other, blah, 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 blah. If you have any questions or comments or anything you want to say about future episodes or this episode, please reach out to us on our social media or email us at pickmechoosemepodcastme@gmail.com. We really want to hear from you guys because also we're mainly just familiar with the North American healthcare system. And we know we have listeners from all over the place. So we also want to hear a little bit more about you and your healthcare system. And if you guys have experiences that differ from in the US and Canada. So please write us. We want to hear from our listeners. And we also want you to
pick me, choose me, podcast me.
Because it is a beautiful day to podcast.